And then I turn around and I, within like one or two turns, I'm like, oh shoot. I was a good 30 minutes back in this cave with quite a few turns. And I realized I hadn't paid good attention at all to the way back.
This is the Adventure Sports Podcast, trying to help you find adventure every day in any stage of life. You're going to hear from explorers, adventurers, business owners, and anyone living their life a little more out of the box than usual. Hey folks, I hope you're having a good week so far. Today, full disclosure, Jordan is one of my best friends. He's perfect for this show in the sense that he's just a normal guy who's balancing career life, family life, as well as adventure life, and is, in my opinion, in the running for Dos Equis commercials as the next most interesting man in the world. He is legitimately one of the most fascinating people I know, and he's done some cool things. And today we're going to be talking about his solo bike tour across or down New Zealand, north to south. Awesome experience, changed his life for sure. And yeah, so I hope you enjoy this perspective. It's a little different. I'm a lot more comfortable around him just because I know him so much better than most of our other guests. But anyway, hope you enjoy. And today's sponsors are two of our favorite drinks, Athletic Brewing, bringing the non-alcoholic craft beer, World Class. The Washington Post just voted them as the best non-alcoholic beer. And then CS Instant Coffee. They're instant coffee that I've been taking on. Oh, we've been traveling a lot, and I haven't had the ability to take all my stuff with me, so I've been bringing that. It's great. Just find some hot water, and you got great coffee to go. Discount for both of those in the show notes. All right, here is the interview with Jordan. But yeah, people kind of already heard, like, you are one of the most interesting people I know, one of my best friends for sure. And we've done a lot of adventures together. But to be honest, I hear kind of bits and stories of, like, your early life, where you started. But it's always these just crazy stories. But I don't know how to put it all together, you know what I mean, chronologically. I know you're spent time in Ecuador and Canada and Florida, but I don't know how it all works together. So if you don't mind, you know, what was your childhood like and where did you grow up? And also, you know, what kind of sports were you doing then? Because this is all news to me, really.
Yeah, it's I got lucky overall with childhood.
Okay.
You know, I always liked being outdoors and being active, but really I have my dad and even my mom to thank for. They moved us around a few times and they're both pretty active people. So I kind of, like you, grew up originally in the Florida area, played soccer, did a lot of the stuff around here, lots of time at the beach, kayaking, and had fun, but also got to spend pretty much every summer until I was 10 in Colorado for 2 to 4 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember, like, Manitou area.
Yep, right at the base of Pikes Peak there. So I remember being like 8 years old one day and deciding I'm gonna climb Pikes Peak at like 2 in the afternoon, getting up to halfway or whatever, that bar trail or something. I forget what it's called. It's a little past the top of Manitou, and it's like getting dark, and you're like 8 years old, and it's like, oh yeah, we should probably turn around before parents worry where we're at.
Oh my gosh, man. That's what I'm saying. You always got these crazy stories, but I didn't know that. So it was kind of just all over the place, doing stuff in Colorado. What else did you do?
Well, that was actually, Colorado was fun because that's where my dad taught us to rappel off a little mountain there. So again, real young, he would put a rope around you, and at the time I was so light, you had to like bounce your way down the rope because the figure eight didn't have enough friction versus my weight to rappel me down. So I got really, really comfortable at a young age just with just climbing and being outdoors, rappelling, so heights, and always enjoyed it, though. It was never like pushed on me. It was always, oh, let's go do this, and rappelling and hiking became just a means to be out there.
Did you get into traditional climbing at that point, or was it more rappelling strictly?
I quite frankly haven't done a ton of traditional climbing. I've climbed a handful of pretty tall mountains, but none of them have required real intense technicality. The thing I got into it climbing for a good while was when my family moved to Ecuador, which is where my dad's from. I got into with him what we called canyoneering. I think it's a little different than what most people think of with canyoneering.
Why is that?
So I lived more in the rainforest part of Ecuador, but it's right where the Andes Mountains slope down into the Amazon. And you get these really steep river valleys, and they're just beautiful, and it rains almost every day there. And basically, any river running down the side of the valley is just, it's dropping several thousand feet of elevation. And so they'd just be little streams. They're tiny. And we would just start from kind of the highway that wound its way through the bigger valley, one of the feeder rivers of the Amazon. And you would just kind of look at the mountain and be like, I bet that river is chock full of waterfalls. So you park the car, and we didn't have fancy equipment. It was like a 20 or 30 foot kind of thick cotton rope that was easy to grab. And sometimes harnesses and maybe a little pack with some snacks. And we'd just start going, and you hike up the river for a while. And then you might, you know, climb a couple easy waterfalls real fast. And then there might be a real big one. And so you'd have to work together to kind of half free climb, but you're tying off of each other and working your way up that waterfall. Or sometimes it just wasn't climbable, at least at our skill level, right away. And so you kind of sneak your way around it, climbing the vegetation on the side, and then dropping a rope from the top and belaying the next person to see if they can do it. So,
dang, man. So how long did you say you were living in Ecuador?
I lived there for 5 years, basically high school.
Okay.
So it was a really, really fun time though. Cause in high school I was active in sports, pretty fit, you could say. And so it was an awesome time to get into that. It was kind of an outlet too. Moving to Ecuador was not easy, and so those Saturdays where I would go canyoning, it just kind of helped set the rest of the week.
And you got into soccer while you were down there too. It's probably hard not to.
Basically, soccer. I might think that I was better than I was.
You? No, not Jordan.
No, I played a lot. I ended up kind of switching from defender to work my back. Way back to goalie. I was tall and quick. And then from that, over time, didn't really end up playing beyond high school, but always loved the sport. It did tear up my knees a lot, though.
Yeah. What do you have? Is it patellar tendonitis or what?
Yeah. So I know you also deal with a lot of knee stuff. I think it's tall, skinny people. It's like a problem for so I basically had no muscle mass around my knees, even though I was, you know, running and all that stuff a lot. And my patellar tendons, both of them, just got really shredded. They never actually snapped, but I mean, to this day, I just have to be really, really careful with that particular tendon. You know, I don't deal with a lot of people have ankle issues, or a lot of people have the what's the long one on the side of your leg? Real long one on the side of your knee that a lot of cyclists deal with.
So, you know, what did the knee injuries cause you to do? Because I know, did you get into biking down there when you were down there? Or did you wait until you got back to the States?
I always rode my bike around town when I was in Ecuador. But that was it, and always liked it. Had a little, you know, mongoose that I'd haul down there. It was fun. But it wasn't actually till I went to Southeastern University, same as Mason. Mm-hmm. You probably don't want that announced, do you?
I don't care. Are you kidding me? I don't care.
it was a good time. And, I would play a lot of intramural soccer. And one day I played like soccer and ran a couple miles, and I almost couldn't walk because of how bad my patellar was. Just, it was messed up. So really didn't do any activity for 3 months, even though I was dying to, other than just kind of going to the gym and doing some upper body stuff. But that blessing and a curse, you know, it got me into biking, because biking is just so much less pressure on your knees than running and soccer and stuff.
So you got a bike, and when was that? Because then we met at some point, and I had an idea like, hey, let's bike Let's bike across the West. And I think we met at like an Applebee's or something with James, and you were eating like quesadillas and like, who is this Jordan guy? Just have all these crazy stories. And then it led to us doing a trip together.
Prior to that conversation, I'd never done any what you could call significant biking. My favorite story to tell, because this is so like, you work with what you have. So there's local trails here in Lakeland called Carter Road, and they're like 8 miles of dune mountain bike trails. And this is Florida, so nothing crazy, but it'll make you work. And the only bike I had around at the time was a beach cruiser that you had to pedal. You have to pedal backwards on the brake. You're going over these like super skinny walls, trying to jam the brake back. And then you hit an uphill and it's so steep. At one point, the beach cruisers had the big wide handlebars.
Yeah.
I pulled up so hard on the handlebar to get enough force to get up a hill, I broke the handlebar off.
Some Walmart beach cruisers, man. Oh my gosh. That's what I like about you is it just don't matter. You just take whatever you got and go for it, which has led to some cool stuff. It can get you in trouble sometimes, but more times than not, it's pretty awesome stories. All right. So you took a beach cruiser out to Carter Road. I'm familiar with that place. Yeah, not ideal. If for anyone that don't know, it's not ideal for out there. And then what started happening in the adventure world for you?
Well, then I met Mason, and my whole life changed forever.
Oh, come on, shut up, man.
No, Mason talked me into, I think, so people like yourself, I think, tell a lot of stories, but you had just come back from this amazing Alaska 5,000-mile trip, total rugged wilderness, and then you had just done a trip from basically Orlando to Maine, right?
Yeah, it was, I think, a month East Coast. A lot more quaint and subdued than the Alaska trip, for sure. It was cake in comparison.
Wow. And so I'm just hearing you telling these stories, and I've been working at my first, I guess, quote-unquote, adult job for about a year and was loving it. I'm someone, I really do enjoy work, but when I hear these stories, it was just so inspiring, and I'm like, man, I like to bicycle, and Mason made it too tempting. You're like, yeah, well, I have a bike you can use, because at the time you were just wandering around like national parks after completing the Tour Divide, and for some reason you were in town, right?
I think I was back home for something. Took a break in the middle. I know my dad had surgery during that trip, and I had to come home for that. I don't know if it was then or before I even left, the summer before.
I'm not sure, and we were decent friends at this time, didn't know each other too well, but I got inspired, and you took away all the obstacles, and so it just came to the point, you know what, I have to say yes, or else I just look like I was leading you on.
Yeah, man, we started planning, and you flew out, and we did, man, just Colorado. It was, you flew into the Denver International Airport. For anyone that's ever been there, it is way, it's almost in Kansas. It is out there. And you put your bike together there and rode it into town like 20 miles. And I was coming out of Estes Park, and we met in Denver. That day was, what was it, like 15 degrees outside the day we started. It was solid winter.
Tons of snow on the ground, too.
It was miserable.
I wasn't used to a road bike at the time. I'd been pedaling to get some exercise to be ready. But yeah, that first day, I remember my shoes, the water would splash up and get, or the water on the road would splash up, and it got on my shoes and it froze while we're pedaling. And I'm like, whew, here goes 3 more weeks of this.
Oh my gosh. And then we biked up to Manitou, and your crucial connections got us a nice little warm cabin to stay in that night, which was honestly needed after such a cold, miserable day.
Yeah. And that was a cool trip, though. I mean, that was so eye-opening for me. I think we went to what, like 6 or 7 national parks, just kind of snaking along Colorado and Utah, or?
Yeah, all of them in Utah. The first time I'd ever been to Moab, you talked me into renting a bike and mountain biking, like shuttling up to the top of like the LaSalle Mountains and mountain biking down a trail. It was probably one of the best experiences of my life. And I don't know, man, that was a great time because I didn't know what I was doing. And I mean, you were just so interesting to talk to. You'd be pedaling next to me all day, just chatting. You're chatty. Telling these crazy stories. I'm like, who is this guy, Jordan? But then we finish the trip, man, and I continue on, or you finish and you go back to work, and then I don't know what happened, because you planned a huge trip after that where I was like, wow, this guy is going far beyond this little trip we did together.
Yeah, so that first bike trip really gave me the bug to want a tour, and what I'd enjoyed from that was the pace was so slow and people would stop and talk to you, and you really had to soak in not just the sites that you went to, but the ride along the way. You realized how beautiful sections were. So I went back to work. It actually probably was a good 6 months or so I was back at work, and I started feeling out a trip. I wanted to do something that was biking related, and it just happened at the time. I had a very good friend, Bo, who was living in Japan. I had a friend who thought he was available to be in New Zealand, and I had a friend living in China. So I started piecing those together and looking at flights, and didn't have a lot of money at the time, but said, I can do this. I want to kind of piece this route together, and ended up pulling the trigger with the highlight being I took my Specialized rock hopper that I'd bought for $200, and it was a mountain bike I'd been using for about a year and a half. A super solid bike, kind of heavy, a little bit small for me. But I threw that in a box along with some panniers and a backpack. Flew out to Japan for 10 days or so and had an awesome time with a buddy there, mostly snowboarding. And then after some big hassles, flew out to New Zealand, into Auckland, which is way up on the north side of New Zealand. And it was a rough start. So the purpose of that trip was, or at least the goal of that trip was to bike from Auckland, New Zealand, way up on the North Island, and go to the very southernmost point. But I was on a mountain bike, so I wanted to make sure to stop and do hiking and actually do like local single track. So just there were lots of mountain bike parks along the way. You might not have heard this, but I landed. I had been sick, horribly sick for like during the entire flight. Like I left Japan with this crazy fever, had a huge hassle getting my bike and just different stuff to the airport and visa issues. And I land in the airport, I build my bike, and I pedal just far enough outside of Auckland. I never even went into Auckland because the airport's on the south side, to like literally find a little grove on the side of the road where nobody would bother me. And I just like put up my tent and slept for a day and a half.
Oh, man. No, I didn't know that, dude. What an introduction.
Yeah, it was, that was rough, and it left me very weak. So it made the first couple days of cycling, kind of slow, but just, it also hit the ground running. And I ended up spending, I had like 45, 46 days in New Zealand. It took about a week to get my stride. I will say that like the first week was very beautiful, saw some amazing sights, but just a little bit like stressful figuring out where to pitch a tent, like how to talk to the locals. Obviously they speak English there, but like it just, I'd done a lot of research, read a lot of books, but you don't know like the style of the country, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Why New Zealand? Why'd you go there? And then also, like, how quickly was it that did it fulfill, like, oh, this is why I came here?
So I went there because if you just Google, like, an idiot, best places to cycle in the world, New Zealand's going to come up on, like, you know, half the articles. Yeah. And it lived up to the reputation. There were quite a few tour cyclists there. They have a lot of bike paths that are unpaid too, so I could actually take mountain bike routes for about a third of the trip. So single track was about a third of my riding was on single track, which I found much more fun. And I also, I mean, the trip in general, I just needed to get away. I was ready for something different. I actually had to, you know, give notice to a very good job, and at the time it appeared that I had to give that up. Ended up getting hired back at that company when I came back like 3.5-4 months later.
You always working out a deal for yourself. We'd be biking and you'd be like, yeah, I told them this, but they offered me a job when I got back for a 20% raise or something. I'm like, how's this guy always working out these deals for himself?
I did get a pay increase, and again, maybe that's just dumb luck, but it also, you know, if you commit to something, everybody was putting up barriers, but it worked out. It was like once I committed and people knew that there was no going back, all of a sudden doors opened too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had actually planned though on that New Zealand trip for a buddy to meet up and he had to bail. So this is the first time I'd done any sort of tour cycling or very long trip by myself, you know, because before I'd done that biking trip with you and it had been so fun to have a friend. And so I was really worried about that too. But what ended up changing the trip really mentally was I started finding these campgrounds and their government, what do you call it? Like funded campgrounds. So you only pay $5 or less. And there's really not even a facilities. It's just like a safe place to lay your tent and people can bring just their stuff. And it's more of a community layout.
Wow.
And I learned if you stay in those, the New Zealanders, the Kiwis, they're just like legendarily cool. Even though their country at the time had like a lot of tourists because it's their summer, they would make you food and just chat and give you drinks. And that's when it started to change is when I found ways to converse with the people better, because then they're excited about their country. And they're like, oh, wow, you're going to be passing this way. Don't take that main road. There's a path that goes through here. There's going to be a hot spring, 20 miles down the road that's not on any map. You need to stop in there. And all of a sudden, the Kiwis, the locals, were helping to guide the journey. And I'm very glad that I didn't have a super firm route to follow.
So we want to thank our sponsor, Athletic Brewing, for promoting a healthy lifestyle through making some of the world's best non-alcoholic craft beer. They make excellent tasting NA for healthy, active, modern adults. They use certified all-organic grains, and each can of non-alcoholic beer is only between 50 and 70 calories. They have IPA, golden ale, stouts, and tons of seasonal offerings. And recently, they actually just took home the gold medal at the U.S. Open Beer Championships for their Double Hop IPA. If you would like to get your hands on some, you can save 15% by using the code ADVENTURE at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic Brewing, the best tasting way to keep your promises. And I also want to thank our sponsor, CS Instant Coffee, for making this show happen. They make 100% Arabica instant coffee. They use compostable packaging, and each package makes about 20 ounces of coffee. So I'll take one of those with me on an overnight trip, and it makes two pretty good-sized cups of coffee. And it's an awesome feeling knowing I can just throw that in my backpack, find some hot water, and I'm good to go. Save 20% by using the code ADVENTURE at csinstant.coffee. That sounds awesome, just to have those campsites just kind of to look forward to and to have kind of the ability to go where you want. What was one of your favorite experiences there in New Zealand? You got any story with maybe meeting strangers or something interesting happen?
One of just the most memorable moments is I'd made it to the South Island on New Zealand. And I've been through some beautiful sections. I ended up on the West Coast, getting close to the Franz Josef Glacier. And it's starting to get a little bit dusky, and I could see on a map that I looked up before that there should be one of these campgrounds ahead. So it kind of links into that campground vibe. And so I roll in there, and I'm just another guy on a bike, and I kind of pick out a plot. And one, it was beautiful. There's this little dock going out to this lake, and there's like somebody way out in the lake just swimming it. And then there's this group of five or six, I jokingly was like hippies, and they're just singing all these old-timey songs in perfect harmony, maybe like one guitar, just having an awesome time. And it was beautiful. It turns out they're actually a family, and they like are semi-professional singers, so they'll even do some tours. And they just camp in their RV, and they sing, and they invite me over. And they're like, hey, we got another single guy, you know, who just kind of rolled in here by himself. And they introduced me to this guy, Neil, from England. He was traveling around in a car, you know, and he's inviting me to hang out. And we actually ended up meeting up several different times throughout New Zealand. And it's just these wild, funny scenarios where you roll up and, you know, there's people singing and and making food, and it just became a big community. And this is New Zealand. You're 5 miles away or so from the Franz Josef Glacier. So it's like this glacier that almost meets the ocean, and it goes through this huge valley with like 1,000-foot sheer walls and waterfalls. And I've never been to Yosemite, but I've heard it's like a, a mini version, kind of that vibe where it's just the big walls and the waterfalls, and it's got this glacier coming down the middle. And so, yeah, you just think about like one 24-hour period in New Zealand, and it's that's why sometimes you can't shut up, because it's like, and then that happened, and then that happened, and all of a sudden you just want to go on for all 45 days.
Wow, man. And that, now was it, I mean, how hard was it to just be alone in that trip? Because I know that this was kind of the first real big one for you to just literally travel across an entire country by yourself.
So we covered the benefits of being alone, where you're actually even more approachable. So people want to watch out for you when you travel with someone else. Like, oh, they're taking care of each other. They've got each other's backs. So when you're alone, people do approach you. And that was very neat. But there's a tough side, too. A lot of nights, I only think I stayed in bed, one night. So I tent camped every night. And sometimes you just kind of be stashed away and you'd be hearing noises in the woods and you're trying to read or fall asleep. And it just takes a minute or two. And then, yeah, conversation, just a lot of hours on the bike. Where it's a little bit sad that you're not sharing those moments. Like you're looking at stuff and, yeah, you can take a picture and put it on Instagram and Facebook, but the moment's different, and not having someone to like recall that moment with, that's kind of sad, because sometimes it's just something that would be really cool to share with someone. But overall, I do think it was very, very healthy and good for me to do it alone. It left me with a lot of confidence, a lot of can do. And now when I plan adventures, I take more of the approach of, hey, I'm going to do this and I'd love it if you come, but it's not going to stop me if you don't.
Yeah. It's an awesome lesson to learn, because, you know, it's what keeps a lot of people from doing stuff. And I understand, you know, being alone is definitely scary. I would say there's probably a lot more times and I've been alone that I wish someone was there than if I had been with someone and wished I was alone. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but just really out of safety. But then you realize, like, that situation probably wasn't as dangerous as I imagined it to be, or as I thought at the time. I was just freaking out a little bit, you know? Like, what kind of things do you have to worry about in New Zealand? There's no bears or anything. Strangers,
there is actually no creatures that are harmful to humans in New Zealand.
Nothing at all. I've heard something like that. Really? That's crazy. It's like, it really is paradise.
Nothing that can eat you, no poisonous snakes. Like, unless you, like, the most dangerous thing that can happen is a bird poops on you and you get salmonella.
Okay. Well, that's not, that's not too bad. I guess strange people is about the only thing you got to worry about, I guess.
That's actually real, yeah. New Zealand, again, it's known for pretty safe people, but they do kind of nab stuff out of your bag. I had zero problem with that, but that was one thing that a lot of other cyclists talked about, like, take your valuables out of your bag.
Dang, man. Now, I think I remember a story about a cave or something while you were there. What is what is that about?
So you talk about being alone, and safety is an aspect with being alone. Yeah. If something goes wrong, having someone else there is really important. So there was one day, and I don't say this super lightly. I've done a lot of quote-unquote dangerous stuff, but I always felt like the risk was I get severely hurt. But there's been almost never in my life where I felt like, ooh, this is playing with life and death. Because I try and not play with that line. That's not my game. But I was having an awesome time biking. At this point, I'd gone out of my way through the west coast of New Zealand. I'd been on this highway that's like the whole time you're just on the Pacific coast, and you got the mountains on one side and the huge waves, and there's all these beaches you can stop at. And I spent the night on this, it was still being constructed. It's like inside this house, cause the wind was really high. So just like, I put my tent inside one of the concrete walls, cause it was a vacated construction house, really pretty spot. Woke up that morning and there's supposed to be a trail right next to me that'll lead to some caves. So I leave my bike and I walk the 2 miles up this river valley. And there's two caves, so there's like, I think they called it north and south. So the north one, it's real small and had tons of stalactites. It was beautiful. And I'm using, I think I had a headlamp and my backup lights, like my cell phone light. Because I figured, you go into a cave, you better have two lights.
Right.
So I come out of that, and the entrance to the south cave is so much bigger, and there's a big sign saying, don't go in here, unstable, there's all these fallen rocks. But it's a nice day and stuff, and I'm like, okay, you know, don't yell too much, but I at least got to check this out while I'm here. So I go in, and it's just a much bigger cave, and it had a lot of passage options, but I'm going in and being pretty smart. I spent some time in caves, so just taking note of kind of each turn and how far I've gone. And then I hear like falling water way back in this cave, and I just get excited because I love waterfalls, and I'm like, no way, is there going to be like a river, like a big waterfall in the middle of this cave? And I just kind of get so excited. I'm moving quickly and had to do some kind of sketchy stuff over what appeared to be like my light couldn't see the bottom of these like crevasses, and you're like either jumping over them or skirting along the side of the rock. And what I wasn't taking note of is like my path wasn't very linear. Like it wasn't like an obvious, this is the path the cave goes. Like I was making my way. So I go way back into this cave, and sure enough, like there's just this falling water, and as far as my light could shine up and down, it's like this waterfall. It was amazing and so cool. And I'm like in there, and you can't even take photos of it, you know, like the mist in the air means you can't use flash, and without flash the photo doesn't do anything, but just loving it. And then I turn around, and I within like one or two turns I'm like, oh shoot, I was a good 30 minutes back in this cave with quite a few turns, and I realized I hadn't paid good attention at all to the way back. And again, there's these really huge like crevasses inside this cave, so you had to be careful. And all of a sudden, basically pitch black in this large cave, I was struggling to find my bearings. I'm not someone who gets lost easy or anything, and I just felt like this massive panic attack coming on, and I had to talk to myself. I was like, no, like you cannot panic no matter what. Like calm your heart rate down. Remember, and I just sat down for 5 minutes and just thought about the path. But it took several hours for me to get out of that cave by trying each route. And I would like leave markers and try one path until I realized like I'm not recognizing anything. And thankfully, saving grace, actually, one time I thought I had taken the wrong route back. So I was heading back and I'm like, no, I remember going over this ledge because it was real tricky. And it just had looked different in reverse. And that was actually like the moment several hours later in this dark cave with a helmet light that probably didn't have much battery left and the flashlight on my cell phone. I finally felt like, okay, I recognize this spot and I'm going to get out of here. But it was weirdly compared to a lot of the more visibly scary things. That was actually, if I think about the scariest moment of my life where I felt like that just, and it wasn't until you're out of there that you even appreciate how bad it was, because I just wouldn't allow myself to think about it. And it might not sound like a lot to a lot of people, but it just took a lot of mental, it was like, whoa, okay, I'll never do that again without really marking my route well and probably taking someone with me into a cave.
Well, dang, man, that's, I think Johnny Cash has a story about that. He got lost in a cave one time in like Tennessee and was praying like, Lord, if I get out of here, I'll never do anything bad again for the rest of my life. And man, that is it's scary. The scariest things don't have to be the biggest, you know what I'm saying? It's like you can slightly miss hitting someone head on at an intersection and just think, oh my gosh, that moment can change your life, you know what I'm saying? Getting lost in a cave is a big deal. I mean, I'd never realized that it was that bad. I mean, we could have gotten a story like, hey, Jordan's lost in New Zealand and just never heard from you again. Good Lord, you could have fell in one of these crevasses and just been gone.
Yeah, but one thing I love about New Zealand, walked out of there, got on the road, it actually rained, so I pull over to like a little shelter. Guy walks out of like the what looked like a house on the side of the shelter. He's like, come on in, and he's like giving me some drinks and making me hot tea, and we passed over the rain chatting, and he was super interesting. And then you leave there and all the rain turned every hillside along this coastal highway into waterfall after waterfall, and the sun came out, and it's like the day ended just beautifully. And that is the highs and lows of New Zealand. It's the trip was just, the scenery was phenomenal.
So that trip was pretty impactful, huh?
Very much so. You know, time alone on a bike too, with no one to chat to, you have to confront a lot of things. You have to think about it, and it made me appreciate the beauty of nature. It made me more comfortable being alone with myself. It really was. It changed my attitude towards a lot of things.
Now, I know that was a handful of years ago. What was it like getting to the end of the trip and getting back home?
So, fun part with it was afterwards, I ended up selling my bike to a guy I went mountain biking with locally in Dunedin, and hitchhiking to Christchurch and flying out to China where I met a friend. And New Zealand's a pretty expensive country. And I'd always gotten plenty of food, but I was always hungry because you're cycling. Well, food in China is like dirt cheap. And I just remember like every second I had eating 10 meals a day that were humongous and spending like $5 doing it. And
oh my
just,
gosh, that sounds awesome. Was it good food?
Oh, it's the best. Like everything is fresh cooked in front of you and it's, you know, it's all fried and stuff. But man, it tasted amazing. And that was actually a really good ease back because when you cycle, I was doing a lot of miles in New Zealand and it's very up and down. So it was good to like do a lot of hiking in China and be with a buddy, and it eased me back slowly where the physicality level dialed down at a good pace. Yeah, when I came back to work, it actually gave me a really good appreciation of work. By the time I came back, I was so ready to be at my office job and be working with coworkers and solving problems because I do enjoy working, but I enjoy it so much more when you come back from a little adventure. It's like you sometimes forget that there's a lot of benefits to being a local in town, and that you know, solving business problems and stuff is actually its own unique deal.
Was it hard to were people more or less interested in your trip than you'd expect them to be?
They were so unrelatable.
I thought it was going to be something like that.
They were interested, but it's always like a, wow, you're crazy and show us some pictures and that's really neat. But they just don't, that it was just a topical conversation. Of, oh yeah, this is crazy Jordan. He just came back from a New Zealand bike trip. They struggled to relate to why I went or what I got out of it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And that's a huge theme, whether you've traveled or been on vacation or you do an adventure somewhere. When you get home, the time that you were gone, how long you say you were in New Zealand? 40-something days?
New Zealand itself, 48 days, and that whole trip was a little over 3 months, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, 3 months on an adventure where every mile and every face is brand new, it feels like a year. Like, it feels like a whole separate lifetime. Chapter of your life, but when you're at home, you know, kind of in your routine, 3 months can go by in the blink of an eye. So that people don't realize, just if you've never been on an adventure that took weeks or months, you don't realize just how much can actually fit into that amount of time. It's a book worth of information and stories you want to tell that the average person just won't even know what they're missing, even know what, like, how much could actually fit. I mean, we just talked to a guy on the show who just rode across the Pacific by himself on a 2-person rowboat. And I honestly, man, I kind of was just glossing over questions. And then Paul's here. He's staying with me right now. And he was like, I was telling him about it. He's like, that is crazy. And he started going into, like, this is what that would require. This is kind of the mindset. This is totally dangerous and nuts. And I was like, dang, you're right. I was just kind of glossing over questions, thinking like, oh, that's crazy, you just rode across an ocean. But no, you wrote, like, doing something like that is it deserves a lot of respect and a thought to appreciate. That is quite an achievement and quite a, can't imagine everything you saw and experience, you know. But it's hard for people back home to really understand that, for sure.
Big time, and it really is a lifetime. It almost seems like another world. And I don't think every adventure has to be 3 months or a long period, but it is a little different when you are completely separated from everything, and that adventure, that time is the only thing you're doing.
Yeah, it's like 100% into it, and then 100% out of it. What an adjustment. So yeah, man. So you didn't stop the adventures there. I know you maintain a pretty robust professional career. You just got a job where it's going to cause you to literally move clear across the country. So congratulations. But what does your life look like since that New Zealand trip?
I haven't done anything quite that long, but even if you stack up the last couple years since then, it's been really fun. I'm not sure how much detail you want to get into, but we took on the Colorado Trail Race. It's like a 550-mile, supposed to be bike race. I'm not sure if we could call it that for ourselves, but from Durango to Denver. And I know Mason's take is a little different. We came in a little bit unprepared physically, maybe even mentally, because that route was true single track for so many miles and very rugged. But it still is one of my. I'm very glad I did it. The scenery up high in the Rockies and some of the photos that I was able to take, because that was it, just the weather and the lighting and the views were spectacular. It was stunning. But you might have some comments on that trip.
It wasn't my proudest trip. I think it was because I was in a pretty bad headspace during that time of life back in, I think I was 2015. Yeah, I think I was pretty depressed at the time, and this trip was kind of like a remedy to try to fix it. And I was just honestly pissed off the entire time, and I hated it. And I was cold. It was terrible. It was terrible. But it was also, looking back, the pictures you took were just unbelievable. And so, adventures, not every adventure's got to follow this script for sure.
So you might have to edit this out, but I have to tell this story about Mason. We're a long ways into this trip, so at this point we're very tired, and there's like a I think it's only like 10-mile section where you go straight up the back of Breckenridge and back down, and you climb a lot of elevation, then you bomb back down, and it's in this 550-mile race. It's like a very small amount of miles. So we're just grinding our way up this hill, and it had been a long night before. I'd like almost broken my thumb, so even I was very angry that day. And so we're grinding up this hill, and it's beautiful, and we're for the most part cheery, and but a lot of hike a bike and a lot of slow pedaling, and we're so happy to get to the top because check it out, we've got 5 miles of guaranteed downhill. We're about to lose 2 to 3,000 feet of elevation. This is gonna be awesome. And we're on these pretty lightweight hardtail mountain bikes. When most people doing this race were on full suspension. So we get to the top and you start going down, and it's just grade A single track with these like big forced, drops, and you have bags on your bike, and it's just beating you up, and I'm hurting. And I was maybe a little more comfortable on those kinds of trails though. So I'm just trying to take it as fast as possible. I'm like, I just want to bomb down this and kind of enjoy it and just take the beating as it comes. And so I go a good mile and a half and I stop, and I kind of had just gotten below the tree line, because we were above the tree line, and I stop and I'm getting some water and just making sure Mason's close by, because if something happened, I don't want to have to hike, half a mile up there. And these two really nice hikers are coming up the trail, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? Yeah, we're doing, they ask, you look pretty rough, like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, we're biking the Colorado Trail. And all of a sudden, like, you hear this noise from a distance. It's like, I'm gonna change the words to make them friendly. Dagnab, mother trucker, just every sort of loud, obnoxious term. It just it was honestly more like noise, like ha. And these people's eyes, these two hikers' eyes get wide-eyed, and around the corner comes Mason, and he sees them, and all of a sudden the look on his face changes. He's like, oh, hey, how's it going, guys? Beautiful day. And it was a funny moment on the trip where it was just a tough trip. It took a lot of mental. It was tough, but that was so funny. The look on those hikers' faces, they just hear like angry Sasquatch coming down the mountain.
I was rageful out there. It was ridiculous. I thought it was going to be therapeutic. It just made it worse. I guess that's why my memory's not great of that trip, just because of how all that. But that was funny. I totally remember coming around the corner and being like, "Ah, oh, crap!" They heard every word in the book. And I threw a rock too. I threw a rock, not on the trail, but I hit a rock and like end out over the bike, and I just pick it up and overhead like a caveman, just like threw it. You stupid rock! It was rough. Golly.
But To our credit, we finished it, but we also hitchhiked about 100 miles up it.
Yeah.
But one of your interviewers on the show, I think it was Bart, he picked us up.
That's right. We were running out of time and had to cut off the trail a little bit and ended up meeting a guy that ended up being on the show twice. So randomly, you never know, man. You never know. It's good story. Good stuff. But yeah, man, we've had some good times together. And, you know, after that, I'd say I didn't, you know, we didn't do a whole lot together. But, you know, after the Colorado Trail and you've, you know, progressed, you got married, you just had a child as well a couple weeks ago. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What has been your adventure needs and personally since doing those big trips? Because a lot of people do these big trips early on and then they may or may not ever get the chance to do it again. And I'm not saying you won't ever get the chance to do it again, but I'm saying like life just changes and you change with it. What for you do you think is your adventure needs and kind of what do you have on the horizon with adventure sports?
Right now, and for the last couple of years, adventure has still been a very important part of maybe what you could consider the complete picture of work and family and life balance. So I've done a couple smaller, like 3 to 4 day bikepacking stuff. There's a guy here in Florida that has some real cool routes that I've done. More commonly, almost every Saturday, I bike single track with a group of friends that's become a community.
Mm-hmm.
Florida itself is pretty fun, a lot of good canoeing and springs. And so it's just been little camping trips, you know, a day or two, you know, canoeing and biking. And it just helps me appreciate the other aspects of life a lot, too. Sometimes I'll end up going a couple weeks without much of that. And it can sometimes be hard for me to maintain like a healthy balance or perspective. I get real antsy. So for me, adventure just keeps a different perspective and has become an important part of what I do. It's not that it has to be anything insane or some giant like checkbox, like I biked, you know, across America or something. I would love to do that, but it's not real practical right now. But I still really enjoy just getting outdoors, enjoying the weather. You mentioned I'm moving to Seattle. I'll be moving in a month, so I'm very excited to mix things up a bit. Fresh mountain biking there. I'd love to climb Mount Rainier or some of the other good hiking trails that are in the area. Mm-hmm. So it's been about staying fresh. My wife likes to be outdoors quite a bit too, but she just likes being out there. So we'll kind of do more, you know, canoeing for a day or going to the beach, and it's a good time for us.
Do you find it hard to kind of strike that balance between wanting to be continue being just doing these big adventures, being a true adventurer, and also being pretty serious family man?
It is. Sometimes I still have kind of a dream, having spent time in Ecuador. I'd love to bike from Tierra del Fuego, the very tip of South America, all the way up to basically Ecuador. So kind of half of the Pan American Highway. I think it'd be beautiful. And, you know, I just have to time that right. I just had a kid. That's not the kind of journey that my wife would enjoy for a long time. And so you'd have to find that balance. But one thing that I can share, it's not for everyone, but I do consider myself a serious professional. I take my career pretty seriously. This move to Seattle is a career move in a field that I really enjoy. And I take family seriously. You know, we just had a kid, and my relationship, my wife, it's important. And I think without these adventures, I would actually really struggle to be a serious professional and be a serious family man. I've actually found with my job, my adventures and getting outdoors keep my perspective very fresh. It's easy to think about things in a way that's not just, this is what the textbook says. It keeps your creativity high. And that provides genuine value for your workplace too.
Okay.
And so
yeah.
Sometimes, and it keeps my endurance or energy levels high too. And I go into work feeling pretty fresh, and I have a goal to accomplish things when I'm there and want to get it done. And sometimes if you just spend too many months in a row only at the office and then at your house, you just slow down a bit mentally and physically. And that's going to happen to everybody in cycles, but I hope that for the most part, you know, you can get that outdoors time and get that refresh that gives you the desire and the energy to also work through tough, challenging work problems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many word problems probably feel like that day you were stuck in that cave, you know? It's like, okay, I've got to find a route to this. It's problem solving. I can't panic because, you know, we all know work can absolutely be panic inducing, not just being stuck in a cave in New Zealand or being chased by a bear or something. And so those same principles are going to carry over. And I guarantee that today's employers and today's workforce is really beginning to realize, okay, we need people like Jordan who have this balance between physical adventure as well as career experience. Because, yeah, I mean, there's nothing that can teach you resilience or self-dependence like an adventure can.
Totally agreed. I actually leave that New Zealand trip on my resume during that 3-month period intentionally because I like it in that conversation. People can't help but ask about it. And I'm like, hey, I dealt with a lot of unknown, tough situations there. And I learned to deal with that. And I think, you know, in an interview, it's like, I think that in a workplace, the same thing happens. It's you're going to find a lot of unknowns and you want people that can be okay with the unknown and find ways to solve the problem instead of running to a manager and saying, I don't know what to do.
Right. No manager on that bike trip. No manager helping you get up that mountain somewhere.
So it's fun. And I'm just looking forward to what the future holds. I think staying flexible, and there might be a grand adventure shortly, there might be one a little farther out, but taking it step by step too is just part of the life adventure.
Any parting words for anyone who is struggling to maybe they might have the opportunity to do something big or maybe not, and they're struggling to balance work, life, and adventure?
Ooh, that's dangerous. My advice isn't always the best.
All
but
right, well, take it or leave it, people.
maybe just think for a moment about what really is important to you. So if that adventure is that you've been wanting to do is really it's been in your head and it's not going away and it's important. Again, just focus on that and commit to it, and a lot of things will fall into place. But you know, if it's not some big adventure you're looking for, and maybe you're just feeling your balance is a little off, then, you know, just start riding your bike to work every other day or find a hiking trail that you can hit in the evening after work. And stuff like that alone will just change your entire world.
That sounds dramatic. That really does. It'll change your entire world. But honestly, it's crazy, man. You just say, all right, I was planning just to spend the next 3 hours on the laptop before going to bed, but you know what? It's already dark. Just taking a walk around the block, or like you said, go out to Carter Road, or me, go out to Green Mountain and just walk for 20 minutes. It's amazing. It's amazing how refreshing and how much of a reset it is, and how, you know, John Muir was right. You know, every walk with nature, you get so much more than you're even looking for. I don't understand why it's so hard for me to get out the door all the time, you know?
Exactly. That's what it comes down to.
Well, you're not going to have any any short list of opportunities when you're up in Seattle for places to go explore at any time, any time of the year, anywhere, for any amount of time. It's kind of, gosh, there's just so much to do around there. So I'm super excited for you and your young family. And yeah, man, we'll probably have to be visiting soon. And come see us on your way out here.
I will.
Well, Jordan, man, thanks for joining us on the show. And yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to do it.
Thanks for having me on, Mason.
Yeah, man, yeah. All right, y'all, get out there and have some fun. Well, first of all, thank you so much for listening to this episode. It really means the world to us that you want to spend your time with us. If you'd like to help us further, please just leave us a review on iTunes, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. You can become a patron, a supporter of the show for $5 a month at patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. And if you know somebody that would make a good guest, reach out. We're always looking for good adventure and outdoor stories. And lastly, thank you to our sponsors, whose messages follow right now. Athletic Brewing makes the best non-alcoholic craft beer. Go to their website at athleticbrewing.com and use the code in our show notes to save 15% on your first order. After all this adventure talk, if you're needing some gear yourself, but you need some advice before buying, go to backpacktribe.com, where you can ask questions to the owners who have experience with all the gear, as well as all of it for sale right there on their website.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.